inform Bishop Picacci of this expansion of her service to the poor. As she had associated her interior struggles with the rapid growth and success of her sisters, she questioned what the price for her brothers would be. She was ready to give even more.
You will be very pleased to know that on the 25th March to Our Lady, the first offering of the Missionary Brothers of Charity will be offered. So please pray that all be only for Jesus. I wonder what Jesus will take from me for them, since he has already taken all for the sisters. I am ready to accept whatever he gives and to give whatever he takes with a big smile.
Still lamenting the fact that she could not share with her official spiritual director, Mother Teresa turned to her old confidant and spiritual guide, Bishop Picacci, for help.
Dear Bishop Picacci, Father Van Exem has been my spiritual father since 1944. I think he still is so, but I feel I need someone to talk sometimes. For some years now, I have found this difficult to do it with him. I don't know why. May I ask you to help me for as long as God wants it as spiritual father, since you know already nearly everything. If you need something else, I will try to tell. Pray for me. Yours in Jesus, Mother Teresa, Missionaries of Charity. Make me share with thee thy pain.
Letting Jesus have a free hand with her continued to be the measure of her self-giving.
I was very happy to go to confession, but as usual, nothing to say. Pray for me, that I remain at his disposal.
She wrote to Bishop Picacci. This constant surrender brought with it a steady share in Jesus' pain. In April 1963, she wrote to Father Nooner.
How very kind of you to write. Yes, Father, Lent is nearly over. The passion of Jesus has passed by, without even touching my soul. My meditations, like everything else, are so meaningless. Day after day, the same thing I repeat, maybe only with my lips. Make me feel what thou hast felt. Make me share with thee thy pain. I want to be at his disposal. The opening went off very beautifully. We have one brother. The second is coming on Easter Sunday. It is wonderful to see and hear the reactions of the priests here. Strange, but they all seem pleased, and at the same time they were expecting this to happen one day. I am praying for Nirmala. Jesus will take care of her because she loves him in his distressing disguise of his poor. She may still go back to Pune one day as a missionary of charity and do great things for God with her generous nature. I am glad you are on holidays. We begin our spiritual holiday retreat on the 15th for the novices and on the 16th for the professed and the superiors. I will not make mine this time. I wish I could go somewhere alone, to be alone with God, even though he may not want to be alone with me. Thank God you keep well. My throat has been and is still giving trouble. The best is that it does not pain when I talk, only when I drink. So I keep on all the talking, sometimes 3 or 4 or 5 instructions a day. The sisters were delighted with the instructions I gave them on chastity. I don't know from where it all came, but it has made the vow of chastity the most lovable and the most natural vow for a religious to make. I wish I could feel what they feel. Never mind. I am very happy and keep a big smile for all. Pray for me and ask the theologians to pray for me.
Throughout Lent, and in fact throughout her life as a missionary of charity, Mother Teresa's prayer,
"Make me feel what thou hast felt. Make me share with thee thy pain,"
was being answered. Was she not experiencing the agony of Jesus and also the agony of her poor? While she was living this ordeal, made ever more strenuous by her ardent longing for God, she fulfilled all her duties with her habitual fidelity and cheerfulness, and she exhorted her friend Eileen to do the same.
Live your life of love for Jesus with great joy, for what you have is all His gift. Use it all for the greater glory of His name. Keep close to Jesus always with a smiling face, so that you can accept what He gives and give what He takes. He still plays His game.
In September 1963, the petition for papal recognition of her congregation was sent to Rome. She could not conceal her satisfaction from Father Nooner.
Many thanks for your kind letter. I am very happy you are going to Rome and that you will pray for me and the sisters and brothers. You will be glad to know something else is going to Rome. Our Archbishop's petition, the letters of all the bishops where the sisters are, my petition, and the report on the life and work of the Society. The petition is to get the pontifical right for the Society. Father, don't you feel happy? The God's little seed is slowly growing, and yet it is all His. The only thing that keeps me on is the conviction that the work, the sisters, the Society, all is His, only I claim nothing. Everybody is well and doing their best. Pray that He may empty my emptiness. He still plays His game, and I still keep smiling during His game. My feelings are so treacherous.
The opening of the Missionaries of Charity community in Jamshedpur in the Diocese of Bishop Pakachi was an opportunity for Mother Teresa to meet him face to face and disclose her persistent struggles. At a time when it was already difficult to speak, having to confide her trial to a new spiritual director would have been very challenging.
On my way home, 8 January 1964. Your Lordship, I can't thank you and your people enough for all your and their kindness and affection you and they have shown our young sisters. I hope they will be a real cause of joy to you and bring many souls to Jesus. Our sisters are young. Take care of them as they are His. Guide them to fervor and sanctity. And the holier they become, the more they will be able to radiate God's love among His poor. I am very grateful to God to have given me the chance to work with you in your young diocese. You must have prayed very fervently for me, because it is now about a month that there is in my heart a very deep union with the will of God. I accept not in my feelings, but with my will, the will of God. I accept His will, not only for time, but for eternity. In my soul, I can't tell you how dark it is, how painful, how terrible. My feelings are so treacherous. I feel like refusing God, and yet the biggest and the hardest to bear is this terrible longing for God. Pray for me, that I may not turn a Judas to Jesus in this painful darkness. I was looking forward to speaking to you. I just long to speak, and this too He seems to have taken the power from me. I will not complain. I accept His holy will just as it comes to me. If you have the time, please write, and do not mind my inability to speak to you, for I wanted to speak, but I could not. Please excuse paper and writing. Thank you for all your kindness to me and mine.
It is hard to imagine how Mother Teresa could be more surrendered to God, but according to her own words, her conformity with God's will had become more complete. She was ready to accept remaining in darkness, even for all eternity, though fearing she may turn a Judas to Jesus. Yet the darkness was not the most painful.
The biggest and the hardest to bear,
Mother Teresa insisted, was
this terrible longing for God.
More painful than the darkness itself was this thirst for God. She was, in fact, experiencing something of Jesus' thirst on the cross, the same thirst that she had encountered on September 10, 1946. As the darkness increased, so did her thirst for the one whom it hid, and her thirst to radiate God's love among His poor. Her terrible thirst for God was expressed in her burning thirst for souls, especially for the poorest of the poor. She was incarnating the charism she had received. Mother Teresa's increasing zeal for souls was reflected in the rapid spread of her mission. To her friend Eileen, she happily related the increasing number of foundations.
Counting heaven, where we have four sisters, now we have 15 houses, and one of the brothers with 9 brothers.
This zeal helped her overlook her own needs and sufferings, and unite them to the sufferings of the poor she served.
Don't worry about me,
she added in the same letter to Eileen.
My throat is better, and it is good to have something to suffer, so that I can share a little the pain of my poor in Nirmal Hride. I long to light the light of love in the heart of every creature of God. What a terrible world this is without the love of Christ.
Mother Teresa's desire to sow love was especially challenged in times of hostility. As the sufferings of the poor increased, her compassion increased as well. When fighting broke out in Calcutta in 1964, leaving over 100 dead and 400 wounded, all she could see was the terrible effect of sin.
It will break your heart to see thousands of people left homeless just overnight. There has been trouble between the Hindus and the Muslims. Pray for our people. What harm sin can do. What a terrible world this is without the love of Christ. I just can't understand why did they do it. Why cause so much pain to the poor? Pray for them. Terrible is hatred when it starts touching human beings,
she wrote to Bishop Akachi. As the violence of war harvested its victims, she saw hatred in action and kept looking for ways to replace it with love. Again, she shared her sentiments with Eileen.
Pray for our people. India is passing through most difficult time. We need much prayers and sacrifices from you people in other lands. I know this will make you very sad, as your heart is filled with working for peace. But my dear Eileen, offer everything and pray much that we be able to extinguish this flame of hatred which is spreading. Only God can ask sacrifices like this.
To be a channel of God's peace and spread His love through the expansion of her mission exacted numerous sacrifices from Mother Teresa. Returning from opening a house in Carambolan, she confided to Father Nooner a particularly demanding sacrifice.
The sisters are in Carambolan and have already started work among God's poor. Pray for them that they may do well and bring many souls to God. They are beautifully brave. I am happy to open all the houses the good God wants and light the fire of love in as many cities. But every time I leave the sisters, a part of me as if is out from me and so causes great suffering. Only God can ask sacrifices like this. Pray for me, for the life within me is harder to live. To be in love and yet not to love, to live by faith and yet not to believe, to spend myself and yet be in total darkness. Pray for me.
If parting from her sisters was painful, occasional meetings with them gave her much joy.
I had all the superiors in Calcutta for the retreat. It was wonderful to have them with me, all together. I don't know what other people feel, but I love my sisters as I love Jesus, with my whole heart, soul, and mind and strength. Keep praying for me, as I do for you. Let us love Jesus with our whole heart, soul, and mind.
Mother Teresa recognized that her darkness was the price of lighting the fire of love. She willingly agreed to pay the price and exhorted the superiors of her communities to do the same, though she gave no indication that she was speaking from direct experience.
You are there for your sisters. The sisters are not there for you. You must be ready for any sacrifice, so to say, to be eaten up by your sisters. You may sometimes feel great loneliness, but this is one of the sacrifices you can make for your sisters. It often happens that those who spend their time giving light to others remain in darkness themselves. The good God called, and I said yes.
As the Holy See was considering her request for pontifical recognition, a brief historical outline of the origin and development of the Institute was required. Mother Teresa, who had been particular about keeping secret the beginning of her congregation, was now faced with the question of what to reveal. She presented an extensive report on the development and present activities of her community, but concerning the call, she just wrote,
"As for the origin, it was very simple. The good God called, and I said yes."
Keeping her yes to God, she remained open to His will manifested in the smallest detail and surrendered each time anew, no matter what He asked of her. It often meant personal sacrifice.
"I would have loved to come, as I wanted so much to speak to you,"
she wrote to her trusted spiritual guide,
"but the Lord wants it His own way. How terrible it is to be without God."
Although she had come to terms with the meaning of her ongoing interior darkness, that didn't mean it was any easier to live with. God was despoiling her of every natural and supernatural support. Her isolation was so total that she could compare it only to hell. After over 15 years of darkness, she presented Father Nooner with this description.
"As for me, what will I tell you? I have nothing. Since I have not got Him, whom my heart and soul longs to possess, aloneness is so great. From within and from without, I find no one to turn to. He has taken not only spiritual, but even the human help. I can speak to no one, and even if I do, nothing enters my soul. I was longing to speak to you in Bombay, yet I did not even try to make it possible. If there is hell, this must be one. How terrible it is to be without God. No prayer, no faith, no love. The only thing that still remains is the conviction that the work is His, that the sisters and the brothers are His. And I cling to this as the person having nothing clings to the straw before drowning. And yet, Father, in spite of all these, I want to be faithful to Him, to spend myself for Him, to love Him not for what He gives, but for what He takes, to be at His disposal. I do not ask Him to change His attitude towards me or His plans for me. I only ask Him to use me, to teach and help my sisters and brothers and our poor to love Him, since I could not love Him. How beautifully the sisters and the brothers love God. How much they try to live up to whatever He gives them through me. How terrible it is to be without God,"
Mother Teresa wrote. How even more terrible it was for her who had been so close to Him to have, as it were, lost all sense of His presence. In God's design, she was allowed to experience some of the dreadful reality of a life without God, which she likened to hell, the consequence of the ultimate rejection of His love and mercy. This experience fueled her unquenchable thirst to save souls by helping each person to know God and His love and to love Him in return. Along with her wholehearted service to the poor, she was offering to God her hidden agony so that others could draw closer to Him. In imparting to the sisters her interpretations of the feelings of Jesus, she was also reflecting the depths of her acceptance of Jesus' cross.
"At the Incarnation, Jesus became like us in all things except sin. But at the time of the Passion, He became sin. He took on our sins, and that was why He was rejected by the Father. I think that this was the greatest of all the sufferings that He had to endure, and the thing he dreaded most in the agony in the garden. Those words of his on the cross were the expression of the depth of his loneliness and passion, that even his own father didn't claim him as his son. That, despite all his suffering and anguish, his father did not claim him as his beloved son, as he did at the baptism by St. John the Baptist and at the Transfiguration. You ask, why? Because God cannot accept sin, and Jesus had taken on sin. He had become sin. Do you connect your vows with this passion of Jesus? Do you realize that when you accept the vows, you accept the same fate as Jesus?
By her life of consecrated service to the poor, Mother Teresa had embraced the same lot as Jesus. Like other saints called to help those they serve draw closer to God, she was called to share the lot of the poor. In a way, she had to fight and resist their temptations so that they could emerge victorious, and the battle was intense. Her statement, "If there is hell, this must be one," was not a questioning of the existence of hell, but rather the assertion of how dark her darkness was. She believed firmly that the possibility of going to hell was a dreadful reality. Back in 1946, she was longing to leave Loreto
to make our Lord better known to the poor who suffer most terrible sufferings, and then also eternity in darkness.
She was now one with the great crowd covered in darkness that she had seen in the vision she had at the beginning of her new vocation, the crowd that called out to her, "Come, come save us, bring us to Jesus." By embracing their darkness, she was bringing them to the light, Jesus. Even the consolation of seeing her sisters and brothers grow closer to God was mixed with disappointment. The hardships of their life and work with the poor demanded much strength and dedication, and not everyone persevered. In April 1965, on the occasion of two sisters leaving the congregation, she wrote to Bishop Pacacci,
"I have never felt sorrow like this, but it has been a great lesson for us all. Pray for them. He takes every drop of consolation from my very soul."
On February 1, 1965, the Missionaries of Charity received the hoped-for pontifical recognition, Decree of Praise, whereby the congregation was placed directly under the authority of the Pope instead of the diocesan bishop. This was a decisive step in the life of the young society. This mark of God's favor moved Mother Teresa to think of St. John the Baptist. His words, "He must increase, but I must decrease," were both her inspiration and her aspiration, for she wanted all the attention to be on Jesus and not on his instrument. She expressed her joy over the pontifical recognition to Father Nooner.
"Thank you for your kind letter. God has his own way in all things. Slowly I learn to accept everything just as he gives it. Your absence from Goa was one of those acts, but I am glad he did like this. I have still many, many things to learn. We had a beautiful day on the 2nd May, our Thanksgiving Day for all the graces our little society has received, especially the Decree of Praise. And now we are a pontifical congregation. See what our Lord does. He pours himself on the little society, and yet he takes every drop of consolation from my very soul. I am glad it is so, for I only want that Jesus in the society be more and more, and I be less and less. The internuncio came all the way from Delhi only for this, and he spoke beautifully. He summarized the society in three words: dependence, detachment, dedication. Pray that we live up to this."
Because the internuncio, Archbishop James Robert Knox, was the official representative of the Pope, Mother Teresa took the occasion of his visit to reveal her darkness, the pivot of her union with Jesus.
"In Ceylon, you told me that you took the place of our Holy Father. I love Holy Father. Maybe this is why I feel better for having spoken to you. and because I want to believe, I accept the darkness of faith with greater joy and confidence. Thank you for teaching me this. Pray for me.
Since Archbishop Knox stood in the place of the Pope himself, his advice meant more for her than that of her confessors or spiritual directors. With her customary sense of humor, she would even play with words in referring to her suffering. In the same letter to the Internuncio, she wrote,
"The heat here is just burning. One big consolation for me, since I can't burn with the love of God. At least let me burn with the heat of God. And so I enjoy the heat."
With Archbishop Knox, she also shared her joy of opening the first foundation outside India, in Venezuela. This milestone was a major step in the life of the new congregation. Though happy that her long-awaited desire was fulfilled, she kept asking for his support in prayer.
"Pray for me, please. I need our Lord."
To Bishop Picacci, she wrote a note hinting again at her pain.
"I am trying to be very brave and cheerful, in spite of what is within me. Pray for me much and often. Pray for me, that I too be brave."
In her letters to Archbishop Knox, Mother Teresa kept informing him about the growth of her young institute and often added on a line alluding to her suffering.
"I was longing to speak to you at the airport, but no words would come. The little note you gave me is with me. I read it often. I know you pray."
After a week, she wrote from the newly opened house in Venezuela, urging him again,
"Pray for me, that I too be brave. I will have many things to tell you when I return."
She shared with Archbishop Knox her joy at being able to help her sisters to love God while maintaining that she herself could not, as well as touching incidents from her life with the poor.
"I was sorry not to be able to be at the Mater Dei College for the meeting. About 60 sisters were in retreat, so they had a chance to talk to Mother. It is so consoling to help others love God, since I can't do it myself. What deep, humble gratitude I owe God for what treasures He has given me and my children. 3 days ago, we picked up 2 people eaten alive with worms. The agony of the cross was on their faces. How terrible poverty is, if unloved. After we made them comfortable, you should have seen the change. The old man asked for a cigarette, and how beautiful of God. In my bag, there were 2 packets of the best cigarettes. A rich man gave them to me that morning in the street. God thought of this old man's longing. Why do I write all these foolish things to you when you have so many other great things to be busy with? Because it is the first article of the creed of our poor."
The first article of the creed of our poor was the evidence of God's tender love for each one of them, manifested in the smallest details. She witnessed it daily and could not help marveling at it.
"No reason to be sad."
Mother Teresa's awareness of God's providence in her ministry and in her own spiritual life helped her through the hard times.
"Thank God we don't serve God with our feelings. Otherwise, I don't know where I would be. Pray for me,"
she wrote to Bishop Picacci. Yet she resisted falling into self-pity. In a letter to Father Nooner, she exhibited the same equanimity.
"Dear Father Nooner, I was very glad to get your letter and to see that in spite of your many great things you have to do for the Church of God, you still remember me. You are sad for me, but we really have no reason to be sad. He is the Master. He can dispose of me as it pleaseth Him alone. I no longer count. And yet it hurts so much. Today I read something in Abbot Marmion, Suffering with Christ. When this fire, God's love, comes into contact with imperfection, it produces suffering. There must be so much of nothingness in me, and so this fire causes so much pain. Pray for me."
In humility, Mother Teresa continued to think that she still needed purification from her imperfections. In reality, her agonizing and interminable darkness was reparatory rather than purgative. It was a participation in the mission of saving souls. She was following the example of Jesus, her master, and of his blessed mother, who suffered immensely, not to be purified from sin, but to save sinners. In her correspondence with Archbishop Knox, rather than describing the darkness, Mother Teresa expressed her determination in the unrelenting struggle.
Pray for me, that I may kiss the hand that strikes with love and joy.
At the same time, she was grateful for the Archbishop's support.
Your letter to me was a great help. Would that in my heart it was as hot as it is outside. Pray for me.
Writing to Bishop Picacci, she went on alluding to her inner agony.
Pray for me, that I may be able to keep giving with joy.
She often just asked for his prayers or reaffirmed her yes to God.
As for myself, I have very little, if anything, to say. I want to do his holy will. That is all, though I scarcely understand it.
Along with the darkness, the cherished memory of the origin of her call also found a place in her confidential correspondence. From Archbishop Knox, for instance, she requested prayers on the 20th anniversary of the Inspiration.
Please pray for me on the 10th September, the Inspiration Day, as the sisters call it. 20 years of grace, toil, and love. I know this is only feelings.
As Mother Teresa became busier, her desire to see her spiritual directors often went unanswered.
I wish I was able to come even for a few hours to see you. But the Lord has his own plans, and I must accept his will, as you said. Pray for me much.
As was now usual when she met with either Archbishop Knox or Bishop Picacci or Father Nooner, she remained without words.
Laus Deus Maria Quae. Train to Bombay. 24 July, 1967. Dear Father, it was very kind of you to come and give me so much of your time, for you have many more souls more worthy of your care and love than mine, which is so small and so empty and so weak. Forgive me for asking you to come and then telling you nothing. This shows you how terribly empty my soul is. But I am not afraid. He has done marvels for me. Holy is his name. Pray for me that in this darkness I do not light my own light, nor fill this emptiness with myself. I want with my whole will only Jesus. Father, I wanted to tell you how my soul longs for God, for him alone. How painful it is to be without him. How my thoughts are only the sisters and the poor. Is this distraction, or are these thoughts the cause of my praying? They are my prayer, they are my very life. I love them as I love Jesus. And now, as I do not love Jesus, I do not love them either. I know this is only feelings, for my will is steadfast bound to Jesus, and so to the sisters and the poor. You spoke of the Father in your instruction. I could have sat there for a long, long time and just listened, though very little registers within, yet if even for that time only. I am very happy the sisters are in Pune, for they will get much spiritual help, and also whenever I come, I may be able to see you. Selfish motive. There is beautiful work in Pune, and I think much good will be done both to the rich and the poor. I would be grateful if you let me know of some good books. When I face our library, I just find it difficult to choose the book I need. Father, can you explain to me, when you have time, how to grow in the deep personal union of the human heart with the heart of Christ? From childhood, the heart of Jesus has been my first love. Every Friday is the Feast of the Sacred Heart for me. I love the Mass of the Sacred Heart, for in the words of the offertory re-echo the words of 10th September. Will you do this for me? This missionaries of charity is only His work. I only accepted to do it for Him. I have tried to follow His plan of the work to the last word. Every foundation is each time another 10th September, for it is His doing. This is why I think whatever is said does not register in my soul. Because of Him, please remember His work on the 10th September. I am sure that once more He will come before I die, and I will hear His voice. Our sisters in Pune have a holy confessor. I am not afraid for them. They will do great work if they are guided properly. I will be going to Amravati on the 26th night, and from there to Bhopal, Jhansi, Agra, Delhi, Ambala, and back home. Pray for me, that I give Jesus everywhere I go. If you write, please write to Calcutta, as I hope to be there the latest about the 10th August. Please pray for me. Yours in Jesus, Mother Teresa, Missionaries of Charity.
In apologizing again for not being able to speak because of the emptiness within, she also revealed her awareness that God, because of the marvels He had done for her, was somehow at work through it all. Like Mary in her Magnificat, she praised God for His gifts. She did not fear the emptiness itself, but was concerned that it could lead her to turn in on herself and fill the void with something other than God. Her thirst for Jesus impelled her to seek help in order to grow in deep personal union of the human heart with the heart of Christ. Her request to learn more about this union takes on added significance in the light of her claim that from childhood, the heart of Jesus has been my first love. Jesus was Mother Teresa's first love and her only love, in a relationship that grew more intense at each stage of her life. Her heart would be drawn with singular intensity to the heart of Christ to the very day of her death. One of the best descriptions of Mother Teresa is that she was a woman totally, passionately, madly in love with Jesus.
I have never had doubt.
Will you do this for me? Were the words that Jesus had addressed to her on the train to Darjeeling on September 10, 1946. In this encounter with Christ, Mother Teresa received the call and the charism of the Missionaries of Charity. The certainty that this came directly from Jesus and that her work was only His work carried her along throughout the years of darkness. Even when she felt as though she had lost her faith in God, she could not question the authenticity of that experience. A journalist persistently digging into the extraordinary experience of someone to whom God had personally spoken inquired, "Were you not for a second in doubt? After all, Christ Himself had moments of doubt in Gethsemane." Mother Teresa responded with conviction.
"No, there was no doubt. It was only for a moment that He felt unsure. That was as a human being. That was natural. The moment you accept, the moment you surrender yourself, that's the conviction. But it may mean death to you, eh? The conviction comes the moment you surrender yourself. Then there is no doubt. The moment Jesus said, 'Father, I am at your disposal. Thy will be done,' He had accepted. That was His agony. He felt all the things you and I would feel as human beings. That's why He was like unto us in all things except sin. If uncertainty remains, that's the time to go on your knees, eh? In that prayer, God cannot deceive you because that prayer comes from within you. That is the time you want Him most. Once you have got God within you, that's for life. There is no doubt. You can have other doubts, eh? But that particular one will never come again. No, I have never had doubt, but I am convinced that it is He and not I, that it is His work and not my work. I am only at His disposal. Without Him, I can do nothing, but even God could do nothing for someone already full. You have to be completely empty to let him in to do what he will. That's the most beautiful part of God, eh? Being almighty, and yet not forcing himself on anyone. Be the one who will satiate his thirst.
My heart hath expected reproach and misery, and I looked for one that would grieve together with me, and there was none. And I sought one that would console me, and I found none. Reads the Offertory, Psalm 68, verse 21, used for the Mass of the Feast of the Sacred Heart and votive Masses of the Sacred Heart outside Easter time. This verse triggered in Mother Teresa's memory her crucial encounter with Jesus on the train, and was a permanent challenge for her to be the one. Years later, on a holy card of Ecce Homo, with the printed words, "I looked for one that would comfort me, and I found none," she would write, "Be the one." She loved to look at this image, a reminder of her call, and to give copies to her followers as an incentive to carry it on. She used to exhort her sisters,
"Tell Jesus, I will be the one. I will comfort, encourage, and love him. Be with Jesus." He prayed and prayed, and then he went to look for consolation, but there was none. I always write that sentence, "I looked for one to comfort me, but I found no one." Then I write, "Be the one." So now you be that one. Try to be the one to share with him, to comfort him, to console him. So let us ask Our Lady to help us understand.
One of the sisters remembered Mother Teresa's explanation.
Be the one. Be the one who will satiate the thirst. Instead of saying, "I thirst," say, "Be the one." Do whatever you believe God is asking you to do to be the one to satiate him.
As every new foundation was for Mother Teresa another September 10, the question, "Will you do this for me?" kept resounding in her heart. How could she refuse? The memory of Jesus' words gave her the strength to overcome herself and console him by lighting the fire of God's love in the heart of every person, in spite of the terrible darkness within. She longed for Jesus' return and wanted him to find her being the one, comforting him in the poorest of his brothers and sisters, since it was in their lives that she saw his passion being relived, as she explained to her friend Eileen.
Thank you for your letter of 25th August received. Your letter is so beautiful. Yes, if we only went back to the Spirit of Christ, if we only relived the Eucharistic life, if we only realized what the body of Christ is, there would not be so much suffering, so much of what we have today. The Passion of Christ is being relived once more in all its reality. We must pray much for the Church in the world, and the world in the Church. Here in India, we are still fighting the famine, and then the hard days of food shortage, and then the floods have spread in so many places. There is so much suffering, so much misunderstanding, which brings so much hatred, and all that hatred can bring and give. Thank God our Holy Father made this year a year of faith. Really, we have never needed so much faith as we need it now. If all goes well, I should be leaving for Africa on the 17th September. But as the things are here, I wonder if I will be able to be away from home at this time. You must not grieve for Jim. He is with God. We are here to go there, home to God. And there is no unhappiness there, but only Shanti, a real Shanti Nagar. So why should you be sad if Shanti is his companion now? Thank God we are in God's hands. He will take care of us. We have now really to trust him blindly. A deep longing for God and death.
Trusting that God's providence could draw good from any circumstance, Mother Teresa recognized in every suffering the opportunity for purification and the possibility to rise out of it with new life. To some friends, she wrote,
Your nephew, like so many in this hard and sad time of fight for the faith, is going through his purification. If he only clings to the living Christ, the Eucharist, he will come from his darkness radiant with new light, Christ. Now you must pray much, as our little society keeps growing, and we must more and more be his light, his way, his life, his love in the slums.
She appreciated the opportunities to speak with Father Nooner, yet she had no new insights to offer him, except her ever stronger determination to go ahead, independent of the cost.
I was grateful to God for giving me the chance of speaking to you, as I really feel much better. I know he will never break his promise if I keep my word to him. I want to love him as he has never been loved before, with a tender, personal, intimate love. Pray for me.
As her love for God was becoming more ardent, the pain of being separated from him was becoming sharper. In this constant strain, she felt the need for God and for human support. She reminded Bishop Pacacci,
"It is so unlike you not to write for Christmas, also not to answer letters. Maybe you were not in Jamshedpur when my letters came. I do hope you will be coming to Calcutta, and then I will be able to have a good talk. I have such a deep longing for God and death. Pray for me that I may use the joy of the Lord as my strength."
Deep longing for God and deep longing for death were two sides of the same coin. For her, death was going home to God. And now that the yearning for him was almost unbearable and the light at the end of the tunnel was not in sight, she longed for eternity, not to end her sufferings, but to be reunited with him.
Be happy, for we share the passion of Christ.
More than 20 years had passed since Mother Teresa began her mission among the poor. At this stage, she spoke very little about her own interior darkness, but never missed the chance to connect the reality of the human suffering she was facing with the sufferings of Jesus. Her heart was one with his. His wounds were so imprinted in her soul that they had become hers. She suffered intensely at seeing the sufferings of those she loved, but she kept highlighting the value and the meaning of human suffering as a means of sharing in the passion of Jesus. She wrote in August 1969,
"Keep the light of faith ever burning, for Jesus alone is the way that leads to the Father. He alone is the life dwelling in our hearts. He alone is the light that enlightens the darkness. Be not afraid. Christ will not deceive us. Don't worry about me. My head does not give trouble at all. Only in the mornings I feel tired. But this is nothing if you saw what our poor suffer without any relief. My heart is full of sorrow because of you all, so dear to me and to the heart of Jesus, have to suffer so much. But be happy, for we share the passion of Christ, and so through our sharing, give the world another proof that Christ is the same yesterday, today, tomorrow in his church."
Jesus' words in St. Matthew's Gospel, "Whatever you did to the least, you did it to me," were a rock on which her convictions were built. Knowing that Jesus could not deceive her, she clung to this world. His presence in the poor remained a beacon in her night. She wrote to her friend Eileen,
"You write so little of yourself, and yet your heart must be full. But you know, as much as I do, Christ cannot deceive. Therefore, whatever we do to the least, we do it to him. Let the joy of the Lord be your strength, for he alone is the way worth following, the light worth lighting, the life worth living, and the love worth loving. I am longing to see you. It seems ages to me since I saw you last." If we feel like this, I wonder what Jesus must have felt during his agony, when he went through all these unspoken and hidden wounds. If you only knew how I long to light the fire of love and peace throughout the world, pray for me, that he may use me to the full.
She had found her way. A letter Mother Teresa wrote to Father Nooner in November 1969 indicates that there was not much new in her soul.
Many thanks for your kind thought in remembering me. Your letter with the words of St. John was beautiful. And you will, I am sure, be surprised that the works of St. John of the Cross seem to be books I am able to understand a little and enjoy sometimes. His writings make me hunger for God, and then, faced by that terrible feeling of being unwanted by Him.
As there was nothing more to share about her inner state, Mother Teresa could go on without the support of her spiritual guides. During this time, her correspondence with Father Nooner nearly came to a halt. When she did communicate, she wrote about her congregation, but hardly a line about herself. Father Nooner himself realized what was going on, as he later remembered.
"So I accompanied Mother Teresa for many years from a distance, meeting her occasionally in Calcutta. In her letters, she often referred to the inner darkness which continued. But I felt she had found her way and did not need my support any longer. So the correspondence came to an end, but the letters I kept, as they reflected something of her inner life during these years."
To Bishop Pakachi, now the Archbishop of Calcutta, she also stopped mentioning her darkness. Her letters at this time dealt mostly with practical matters. But in a letter written on December 21, 1969, she did remind him about an important date in her life.
"Today, in 1948, I went for the first time to the slums, my first meeting with Christ in His distressing disguise. Pray for me."
What a difference between that first day, when she was working as a lone nun in the slums, and the present, when she had a thriving religious community with two branches. In the beginning, she had only God's promise to hold on to. 21 years later, she had almost 300 sisters in 33 communities around the world. She knew that this was God's work. Although Christ seemed to have rejected and forgotten her, she was faithfully and lovingly serving Him in the distressing disguise of the poorest of the poor. And it was through her sufferings that He was bringing them the light of His love. Chapter 12. God uses nothingness to show His greatness. An instrument in His hands.
"I wonder at His great humility and my smallness, nothingness. I believe this is where Jesus and I meet. He is everything to me, and I, His own little one, so helpless, so empty, so small. Mother Teresa."
In 1975, the Missionaries of Charity, numbering over 1,000 sisters in 85 foundations in 15 countries, celebrated the Silver Jubilee of their foundation. The succeeding years would be marked by the rapid expansion of the congregation throughout the world and the increasing attention of the world's media on Mother Teresa and the work she had started in the obscurity of Calcutta's slums. Though she had made no mention of it for the past 6 years, the darkness still had its unrelenting grip on her soul. It was during this time that Mother Teresa met Father Michael van der Piet, a member of the Priests of the Sacred Heart. In October 1975, while walking down the street in Rome, he saw Mother Teresa waiting for a bus with another sister.
"My first impulse was to go to her, but I said to myself, 'Leave the woman alone. Everybody is always staring at her.' I walked on, my heart pounding, but suddenly I thought, 'She's a saint, and I am a sinner. Let the sinner go to the saint and ask her to pray for me.'"
So he returned. After a short greeting, Mother Teresa, in her usual fashion, asked him to give a conference on prayer to her novices 2 days later. Following the conference in the convent on the outskirts of Rome, Father van der Piet accepted Mother Teresa's invitation to preach a retreat for her community in November.
"Remember my face before Jesus."
Mother Teresa's first letter to Father van der Piet was, in fact, a note she wrote during that retreat. She professed her emptiness and smallness and questioned the usefulness of seeking spiritual help in this state. Asking for his prayers, She alluded to the private vow that had been carrying her through the agonizing struggle.
Dear Father Michael, God love you for all the love you have given to each one of us. Keep the joy of giving only Jesus to all who come in touch with you. I would be grateful if I could turn to you for spiritual help, but I am absolutely too small and empty. Only Jesus can stoop so low as to be in love with one such as me. Pray for me, that no does not pass through my heart and lips when Jesus asks. Yours in Jesus, Mother Teresa, Missionaries of Charity.
Father Vanderpeet's impressions from this and subsequent meetings with Mother Teresa leave no doubt as to the holiness and union with God that she radiated.
Whenever I met Mother, all self-consciousness left me. I felt right away at ease. She radiated peace and joy, even when she shared with me the darkness in her spiritual life. I was often amazed that someone who lived so much face-to-face with suffering people and went through a dark night herself still could smile and make you feel happy. I believe that I can say that I felt in God's presence, in the presence of truth and love. I could not help but think, here is a person God dreamed of in paradise, truly a touch of God. Yet I have to say at the same time that she was one of the most down-to-earth persons I have ever met.
This practical spirit came to the fore especially in the way she directed her congregation and managed to stay on top of the myriad demands on her time by so many people within and outside her religious family. Yet despite the numerous activities, the frequent travels to visit the increasing number of houses, the growing needs of the poor she witnessed daily, and the persistent interior darkness that troubled her, her fidelity to prayer was categorical.
Dear Father Michael, your letter of Christmas and this one of 26 February brought me much joy. For the gift you keep on giving, praying for me, I think I do the same for you. Forgive me for the delay. I just could not make it. The whole of January I spent it traveling in the south of India. The whole February in Calcutta, and round and now again, I am going to the south for another 2 weeks to finish the remaining houses. I make my holy hour with Jesus straight after Mass, so that I get the 2 hours with Jesus before people and sisters start using me. I let Him use me first. You write so beautifully of nothingness, we, and fullness, God. And to think that those two are so apart, and yet the humility of God has made it one, Jesus. Keep the joy of loving only Jesus for you and for me. Yours in Jesus, Mother Teresa, Missionaries of Charity.
Mother Teresa's uncompromising fidelity to prayer was one virtue that her sisters had observed back when she was in Loreto. Her first followers were struck by it as well. It continued to impress generations of missionaries of charity, and in later years, the numerous visitors to the chapel of the Mother House. People were fascinated just watching Mother pray. They would sit there and watching her be really drawn into this mystery, one of her followers observed. Hearing her loud and clear voice in prayer or seeing her penetrating gaze fix on the tabernacle left an impression of great intimacy with God. Little did they know that she had not enjoyed the fruits of that intimacy for decades. Indeed, one of the great challenges of the darkness was this absence of a vivid sense of God's presence in prayer. It was something she still longed for. In September 1959, she had written to Jesus at the request of Father Pacacci.
I don't pray any longer. I utter words of community prayers and try my utmost to get out of every word the sweetness it has to give. But my prayer of union is not there any longer. I no longer pray. My soul is not one with you.
At that time, her prayer, which she labeled as miserably dry and frozen, proved effective and obtained many graces for others. This was true throughout the years of impenetrable darkness. A letter reveals an aspect of her prayer for others.
Often during adoration, Faces of the people I have met come before me, and I remember them to Jesus. Do this for me as I do for you. Remember my face before Jesus. So helpless, so empty, so small.
Mother Teresa's letters to Father Vanderpeet did not depict the details of her interior trial as her writings to her previous spiritual directors had. There were brief allusions, however, in letters that focused more on the work of her community, and these were revealing, as he later recalled.
Her letters reflect many beautiful things, but she also mentioned this emptiness, this darkness. It was not in every letter, but it was definitely a theme that would occur.
The mystery of God's greatness and her nothingness had become a recurrent theme in her speaking and writing. Her smallness, an essential element of the way she related to God and to others, had shaped her way of praying and acting, her very life. She even welcomed the growing publicity from his hand, since in her smallness, she neither made any claims nor wished to place any obstacles in the way of his action.
Dear Father Michael, thank you for your letter of 23rd May. It was so good of you to write. I want to write, but I have nothing to say, but that I wonder at his great humility and my smallness, nothingness. I believe this is where Jesus and I meet. He is everything to me, and I, his own little one, so helpless, so empty, so small. I am so small that all these things that the people keep pouring at and round me cannot enter within me. Maybe because of the darkness I do not see. Maybe he just wants it to be so. I let him have his way. I smile at the cardboard box getting filled with all kinds of things, big things, most of which I do not understand. But I know that I am being used only for and by them, so that they proclaim the presence of the poor and their concern for the poor, and so I accept everything with a smile in their name. I am leaving